Today, I will present you the foundation of binary file format reverse engineering, or in other words, how to analyze something which looks like gibberish. My name is Thomas Pointuber, and for around 4 years now, I'm part of the KiCad project. Since a few months, I'm also part of the KiCad lead development team. I'm a software engineer with a strong security background, and regularly use that knowledge at so-called capture the flag competition. Once upon a time, I thought, why not train my reverse engineering skills and do something for KiCad? And so the idea was born to write an importer for a closed source PCP program. I started with Cadence Allegro, but then moved on to Altium because of a bigger user base in the open source hardware community and the existing documentation. Well, and the file format of Altium is easy to reverse engineer as well. My presentation is split into two parts, a general background and a dive into the basics of reverse engineering. This presentation is structured in a step-by-step fashion to help beginners with their own reverse engineering attempts. As said, I reverse engineered the PCB and schematic file format from Altium. The only reaction I ever had from them was a Twitter follow, but I assume I chased them away with my KiCad posts. Nonetheless, we need to keep in mind that this work might not be in favor of a company. To protect ourselves against lawsuits, I will therefore start with some legal basics. Please keep in mind that this information is informal and use it at your own risk. When I started, I even went to my law professor, and his main point was companies do that all the time, so there should be no problem. And in fact, Altium itself implemented quite a dozens of different importers. However, reverse engineering is quite a broad term. This talk is about black box reverse engineering, where we look at the behavior of a program, but not at the source code. Thus, we operate like a normal user, and additionally, inspect the files which are generated. But the program itself will never be touched. There also exists a different approach called white box reverse engineering, where the program itself is decompiled and analyzed. While this is allowed sometimes for interoperability reasons, I recommend to talk to a lawyer beforehand you try this, because there are some preconditions you have to fulfill. To finish up this legal chapter, if you reverse something, you have to own it. The easiest way, of course, is you already have the program. This was not my case. For Allegro, I only had a few applications, which is really annoying for reverse engineering. In the case with Altium, I started with files from the internet and files generated by a friend of mine, but I cannot recommend this as the primal way. After all, you want to interact yourself with the program. What really helped me was the suggestion at last forced them to try out Altium Circuit Maker, which is a free PCP program by the same company. After some analysis, I found out the Altium product shares most of the file format, except the directory names. So even though I worked with Altium Circuit Maker, this allowed me to build a parser for Altium Designer. Of course, some advanced features cannot be analyzed this way. Even if you own the program and have some personal projects, I recommend you to search for existing projects on the internet. After all, most applications have more features as you will ever know about, but others might use them. And you want to pass those as well. What also helps with your work is the existence of an official text format. Even though we analyze the binary file, they may share some basic data structures. And text files are usually easier to understand. What also helps a lot is knowledge about existing work. Perhaps someone already tried to reverse engineer the file and found some hints. In my case, it was fairly easy to find existing resources. There was Altium to KiCad, an existing converter written in Perl which helped with my initial attempts. It is helpful to read existing work, but keep in mind that reverse engineering is a lot of guesswork. Project might get one thing right while having wrong assumption for the next data structure. What my work was also about is detecting errors and finding the correct solution. Let's start with the interesting stuff, how to analyze gibberish and find out what it actually does. I will not talk about writing a KiCad importer. For this, I point towards the presentation of Roberto. When we start with reverse engineering, we can check some basic information, like, is it really a binary file? I would say this is the simplest task, as you simply have to open the file in a text editor, or as shown here, look at the bytes. In case there are a lot of non-printable characters, like control characters, we can suppose that this is a binary file. Please note that not all of the file has to be binary, like Altium, where parts are in binary format, while other stuff is similar to the old Prolog file format using human readable text. The next step is way harder. We have the data we want to parse, but we need to know where this data is located. For Eagle, this is quite simple. They use XML, a human readable markup language, and the data is easily spottable in there. For binary files, data can be structured in a hierarchical way, and we need to understand each level of abstraction to access the data. I have drawn an abstract structure of the Altium file format and how this can look like in practice. On the base, they use a so-called composite document file, version 2, which is similar to an archive. In there, directories and files are located. Many of those files contain a number of so-called records, others compressed step models. A record is a single item, like a track segment, and the fields inside a record contain the data, like the start and end point of a track. To correctly parse such a record, we therefore need to find the correct file inside an archive format and then extract each record for the actual data. To find out if there is a known file format used, we can search for the so-called magic bytes. Those bytes are used to differ between different file formats. The file command can be used to check if there is a known magic byte sequence. However, if it is a custom-made file format, this will not help much. To get some insights into an unknown file format, we can try to detect known data structures inside the file. Binwalk is such a tool which allows us to check if there are files embedded into the file, like a clip, compressed data section, or an image. While this only allows us to extract such files, we can mark known file sections and use that knowledge to guess the overall structure. I would say finding out where to find data is harder than finding out what bytes have what functionality inside a record. So I hope there is some known underlying file format and you can skip reverse engineering this part altogether. If you know the document file format, you need some tooling. In my case, I found a Vue application which was good enough for my requirements, and also found a library which can be used by KiCad. If it is some obscure file format, you will likely need to write this yourself from scratch. Opening a file in a text editor gives you a lot of bytes, and this is quite overwhelming. After all, we cannot really read that stuff. Just looking around will not lead to sudden inspiration. One might ask if there is encryption or compressed data in the file, and this can be easily checked using statistics. A very useful encryption scheme will result in something called pseudo-randomness. The measurement of randomness is entropy. By plotting the entropy of a file, we can see if there are sections of data where encryption or compression is applied. One might ask now, how can we differ between encryption and compression? And the answer lays in the quality of randomness. When you use visual analysis on the data, like plotting the distribution or sequences of data, encryption will always show noise, while compression will likely result in some form of visual patterns we can spot. Of course, bad encryption also results in such patterns. Up until now, we just issued a few simple commands. Before continuing, I want to present some tooling which can be helpful to you. I spent quite some time searching for tools, and I'm not really completely happy with each of them. Perhaps sometime someone steps up and combines those good features into one cool tool. If you're open for this task, come to me. We work with binary files, so HexEdit is always a good idea. For my work, I selected HexEdit. While this editor does not support diffing, searching for known data is really good implemented, and this is the task you will need a lot at the beginning. While a disadvantage for some people, it is web-based, so you can run it on any system you like. The second tool I want to outline is KiTiStruct. We work with structured data, and a normal hex edit is something which does not help you that much for this task. With KiTi, we can define how a file is structured and automatically generate the parser. Furthermore, it includes a simple hex view where you can visually see what data you already know about. This visual aspect makes it really powerful, as you now know how complete your understanding of the file format is. And by knowing what you know what you not knew. The third tool is a tool known by many Capture the Flag players. It becomes helpful as soon as you are confronted with encoded data. like if you have Base64 encoded text. You can easily build and test decoding pipelines with it. It also includes functionality to automatically detect the encoding of data with different levels of success. There are a lot of tools out there. I put some additional ones as links on this slide. I inserted this step with the thought that we do a lot of binary diffing. The less the file changes on successive saves, the easier it is for us to analyze those changes. The simplest of all tasks is to save a file twice. In the ideal case, only some timestamp should be changed. In practice, it is often not that easy. Here, I talk about the unknown parts of a file. If you're confronted with a compound file format, like in Etsium, I talk about the files stored in there, not the whole file. It makes sense to extract the parts of the file beforehand, if you already know how to locate the data. Working on these data sections makes life a lot easier. If you are confronted with a file which is unstable, in the most problematic case, where we do not know how the basic structure of the files looks like, we can use a trick to start with the analysis. By introducing a unique marker, we can align our analysis on this part of the file and ignore everything around. Like, if we analyze a track, we set one part of the track to unique position, which we can search for in the hex viewer. This allows us to analyze the record structure without caring about other parts of the file. Once you know the record structure, you might get some new clues how to find it from the document root. Before thinking about values, we need to confirm something first, which is the endianness used in the file. Usually, on x86 system, it is little endian, but just to be sure. The endianness describes how data is stored in memory, like is the most significant byte at the lower or higher address. Endianness is important for any data object bigger than 1 byte, so an ASCII text looks the same on little and big endian system. For an integer on the other hand, depending on the endianness, you will see a different value in the hex viewer. We can check for endianness by introducing unique value and then searching for it in the hex viewer. Note that it is preferable to use a field where no unit like a length is attached to, as we do not know the internal unit used in the file yet. Now I want to give a quick look into some basic data types, starting with integers. As we know, a byte is 8-bit in size. One byte allows us to represent 256 different values. If we go above this, we need more bytes. An integer, for example, is 4 bytes big, or in sum, 32 bits. Using 2 complement, we can represent positive as well as negative values with it. This is the standard way of how numbers are represented inside a computer. However, we talk about data storage. While many file formats use the same representation inside the file, as it makes the implementation easier, this does not need to be the case. Especially protocols which are used over network try to preserve as many bytes as possible. Protobuf, for example, uses a different amount of bytes depending what concrete number to transfer. Just keep this in mind. Besides whole numbers, there are floating point numbers. Nowadays, most machines use some version of the IEEE standard for its representation. Hope you never need to do a deep dive into this numbering encoding, because it can get quite complex. For example, Java has some subtle differences in the implementation. To search for floating point numbers, you can, for example, set an object to a specific angel and search for that value. Do not only search for the value itself, but also multiple of it and different representation forms. Because floating point numbers are prone to rounding errors, it can be that the floating point number is in fact an integer with some resolution. Look for those as well in case you do not find anything. The last two slides were about basic data types. In some cases, like coordinates, we need to know the internal unit used for storage. Usually, metric or imperial units are used. To avoid floating point numbers, integers with a small base unit like nanometer or microinch are often used and should be looked for. KiCad uses nanometer internally, which allows error-free storage of imperial units. Altium, on the other hand, is an American company, used microinch. Thus, we cannot store metric units without losing precision, which is exactly the point why my importer sometimes has one byte of errors for coordinates. What's also fun about Altium is that they use integers most of the time, but for one special case with zones, they suddenly used floating point numbers to represent coordinates. That was quite a headache to find out. If you want to find out what internal unit is used, keep in mind to select the same unit as you search for to avoid rounding errors. Then, there's a bit of guesswork you have to do. One more basic data type you will see in different variations are strings. They represent the content of a text field, the designator, or even a set of data. In the LTSM case, as shown here, parts of the binary file use the old Prodl file format, which is text-based. To search for strings inside a binary, Linux provides a simple string command. Just looking on the output could give you some basic clues what data is stored in the file. To represent strings, there are numerous ways. First off, strings can have a flexible length. To encode the length, you can use different approaches, like assuming a fixed length buffer and only using parts of it. The obvious disadvantage of this approach is the unnecessary allocation of memory. Thus, this doesn't scale very good. I found some of those strings in the LEGO file format. Separately specifying the length is a better approach. You say the string has n bytes and then this number of characters follows. This is the way LTSM handles strings. Zero-terminated strings are something every low-level programmer should know about. By using a special terminator, like the zero byte, the end of a string is defined. Just note, it does not need to be a zero byte, but can be every character. Terminator-based strings are used in the Prodl file format, when ASCII character is used as terminator. The problem with this is that the terminator can also appear in the text, so the program has to apply escaping first. If you are confronted with such a string, always look for the escaping sequence as well. Besides length, strings have an encoding we need to keep in mind. ASCII is the most basic one, which uses 7 bytes per character. UTF-8 is one way to encode Unicode characters, but there exist other variants like UTF-16, which is often used on Windows systems. Besides ASCII, there exists a wide variety of language and operating specific encodings. Finding the correct encoding can be quite a hassle. I already talked a bit about records, but not how they look like. A record is a set of bytes which represent an object, like in this case a track. There are different ways how such a record could look like, and I will show it using LTSM as example. The first byte is the record type, so we know what we are parsing. Based on the type, the meaning of the fields inside the record are known. The next 4 bytes are the length of the record. Having a length attached to it allows us to decouple reading of the record and fields. In case the record is not of interest, we can skip over it. In case we want to extend the record with new fields, we have always the possibility to do so. Just increase the length field. After that, there is the data of, in our case, the track object. For example, the layer, some flags like the track locked, net, and component assignment. What I also show in this example are unknown data, which has likely a meaning, but they did not find the meaning out yet. Even without knowing about those data sections, we can successfully pass tracks and import them into KeyCard. Your file format does not necessarily have this type of structure, but usually object data is stored in proximity to each other. Perhaps the records are a fixed size or you have pointers in there, but having data which belongs together at a logical proximity is very usual. To analyze the data inside a record, we can use different techniques. My work is mainly based on binary diffing, where I do a single change and then save the file. By comparing those two files, I can see what byte changed and how the data changed. This allows me to find out what byte has which purpose. If you are not sure if the byte you found is the correct one, you can change it inside the file and load it in the application. This is also called probing. By observing the change in the program, you can then validate if your guess was correct. A third point, which helps you with reverse engineering, but usually not with identifying what the byte does, is non-documentation. If the program has an ASCII format, the binary file format will likely contain the same values in a similar encoding scheme. Knowing this, you can identify fields you are otherwise unsure about their meaning. I did this to get an understanding of the meaning of the subpolar index field in LTSM. This was only a quick overview over the basics of file format reverse engineering with some excursion in the LTSM file format. One thing you need is knowledge, but what you need even more is perseverance. Reverse engineering is a cycle of repetitive steps and lots of guesswork, where you slowly go towards the truth. So if you want to start with reverse engineering, keep this in mind. You will be rewarded with the knowledge that you analyzed something only few people know about and hopefully a working importer. To give some final guidance, I wrote some tips on this last slide. Starting with the visual stuff allows you to validate your work and will motivate you with nice pictures. Don't just document your stuff, but start early with writing and parser. If some guess is wrong, this is the way to warn you soon. For parsing, I suggest to just do a mapping into your own data structure without too much processing. Transforming your parsed data model into the data model used, for example, by Kika should be a separate step. This decouples parts which are complex enough for itself. Also, always check your assumptions, like known byte values. If those assumptions fail, you will be warned better sooner than later. Starting with reverse engineering is hard. Don't try to be perfect right from the start. It's better to assume some file offsets and get stuff working than hindering yourself on a specific problem. Perhaps analyzing this other data structure gives you the missing clue. Finally, strive for simplicity. While there are magic constants in the beginning, at some point they should magically resolve themselves. The original programmers were likely lazy and developed something which is logically interconnected. If everything just makes sense, you're likely on the right track.